9 seconds to play on the shot clock. Valanciunas gets by Jordan and again finishes with the left hand, puts it up on a tray, and stares at his hand longingly down the floor as he mugs for the bench. And JV's got 16.
You know, he called himself the second coming of Sabonis. So, you know, we're going to give him that. You know, we give him to him, you know, but we don't want him throwing it behind his back or nothing like that.
I'm not really listening to music, like to pump me up, but OJ Genesee.
I'm in love with the cocoa.
I'm in love with the cocoa.
Woo! Victory, baby!
We got next. This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and JD Bunkus.
Welcome to Free Association. This is Sportsnet's weekly Raptors and NBA podcast. I'm the aforementioned Dave Zarum. Alongside me, as always, my co-host, JD Bunkus. JD, how you doing?
Good. I'm like cranking on 4 hours sleep. Yesterday was Championship Sunday and right. Royal Rumble Sunday.
Big
and
sports day.
Raptors game. Went to it. Ate some sushi in the box.
You went to that Clippers game.
Yeah.
What a mighty fine game to go to.
Oh, especially when all the food and alcohol is free for you and you're sitting up there with the monitor and the playoff football. I felt like Jerry Jones. I was like, I think I'm Jerry Jones now. This is exactly the experience that he has.
Well, you're pretty close. I mean,
Sportsnet's got great, great box. It's dead center.
Yeah.
Like it's a really good view of the game. So
yeah, where's my box seat, Sportsnet?
I don't.
It's Scott Moore.
Yeah.
Are you listening right now?
Scott Moore's got to like you. So you're out.
It might be quite some time.
Yeah. It's going to be a little.
I won't get my hopes up, but that's okay. Because I'm looking forward to this show here today. You know, that Clips game was really impressive for the Raptors, yep. and just in general, obviously riding currently what is a 8-game win streak.
8-game. And look, if you look at the schedule, like there's no definitive point where this is coming to an end.
It's a good point, and we'll get to the schedule ahead. We got a lot ahead to get to on this show, including our midseason awards.
With Tim McAuliffe
will be in studio.
He
for
does
that.
A little show called Tim and Sid. It's not many people have heard of it.
I've never heard of it, but yeah. I hear decent things.
But it's cool that we're giving him a platform to, you know, to talk to the people.
Always like to help out the little people.
Yeah, it's true.
So
he's a nice guy. We'll give him a shot.
So Tim will join us to hand out some midseason awards. From the outside, it seems like they're pretty straightforward, but I think there is some contention within the picks there. So we'll get to
Well, yeah,
to
that's because you're a contrarian.
Yes.
And I have no doubt you're going to pick guys. Yeah. I'm going to be like, who?
By that, I mean, I'm going to wait till you guys make your selections and then I'm going to pick somebody
pick
different.
The opposite. Great. Oh, I like it. Yeah. I like that.
I'm told it's good radio.
Can I also say what I'm excited for?
Yeah.
James World returns.
It's the triumphant return of James World.
Oh!
It's been long overdue. But, you know, last Friday, everyone was talking about Kobe's, the anniversary of Kobe's 81-point game against the Raptors.
Right.
Incredibly one of the landmark moments in Raptors history, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin my thought on this, but I want to talk about that a little bit after I hear James's thoughts on that.
So yeah, Mike James is going to share his takes, his memories from that day. Mike James, best player on the floor for the Raptors that night.
I was going to say Mike James's memories. You know when they do those like TV episodes where it's a cutaway of like two different people's memories of the same event,
right?
And the one is like, they're like telling the police or something, well, this is what happened on this day, and it's completely distorted, two different people. I feel like Mike James's memory is like, other than Kobe scoring 81, like a lot of the events that he's going to tell us probably don't fit the same description as, say, you know, Jalen Rose, who's been on the show before, or others. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah,
it should be interesting.
I can't wait to find out. We love Mike James around here.
He's the best.
What else we got going on? We're going to look at the schedule.
And, of course, we've got the big question. And
I want to talk some Raptors because they are playing well and there's lots to talk about. So let's get to it right now.
Hey, it's Kalo, and you're listening to Free Association.
I can't help about the shape I'm in. I can't sing, I ain't pretty, and my legs are thin. But don't ask me what I think of you. I might not give the answer that you want me to.
Welcome back to Free Association. We wanted to get to the big question. We will get to the big question right now. There's a lot of stuff we could talk about right now, but I think that it's kind of interesting. We're doing our midseason awards. We're cruising. We're getting pretty close to the All-Star break. February 12th here in Toronto, All-Star weekend.
I can't wait.
We're perilously close. I can't wait too. It's going to be really fun. You and I are both going to be there. It'll be my first All-Star game. Have you been to one before?
I go every year.
You go everywhere. Yeah, you're a fancy pants.
I'm somewhat of a fixture.
Yeah, you are.
No, I've never been. It should be cool.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can't wait. I'm more excited for All-Star Saturday than I am Sunday. Yeah, I've always been that way. I love All-Star Saturday.
Love me some shooting stars.
So the big question this week is running into the midway mark. How do we feel differently about this year's group than we did last year's group?
And it's an interesting question because on paper, I don't know the exact record if you compare year to year, but on paper, the Raptors are in a very similar situation as to last year in terms of win-loss record, in terms of placement in the East. But it does sure feel a hell of a lot different this time around, doesn't it?
So I'm actually going to go a little bit the other way on that.
Really?
Yeah, because I looked it up. I just wanted to reference it. Last year at the All-Star break, they were 36-17. Right now, they're 29-15, I believe.
Okay.
So pretty close to the same winning percentage.
Yeah, we'll probably see
just about dead even. So last year, they were fourth in scoring, and the defensive issues hadn't really crept up pre-All-Star game, if you remember. Like, they were still 13th in defensive rating. They finished the year 25th.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And Kyle Lowry was playing at a really high level. Remember, like, it was a kind of a no-doubter that he was going to be the All-Star game starter in terms of he was having the best season as a point guard.
The Raptors had sat first in the East for a big chunk of of that
DeMar DeRozan was gone for a good chunk, so there was a whole narrative of, like, hey, when DeMar comes back. And then when DeMar did come back, there was a thing about the defense where it was like, you know what? DeMar's fits Casey's system a lot better. He's really going to help with the dribble penetration that, you know, you're lacking with playing guy like Lou Williams more or Gravis Vasquez more. And if you remember, I certainly remember because I was producing radio shows and getting fan callers being like, why can't we go to the Eastern Conference Final?
Well, you know, okay, you bring up a great point because you're right. Like, technically, at this point in the season, things looked pretty damn good last year for the Raptors. And you know, part of the reason why I think I feel a lot better this time around is because you look at the way they're winning games, obviously doing it on their defense, they're not relying on Lou Williams for anything because he's not on the team. But before you know, there's a lot of relying on Lou Williams to get his 3-point and ones and his kind of crossing your fingers and hoping he gets hot. And you were winning a lot of games like that. Like, yeah, Lowry was playing well. But that a lot derived from the Lou Williams kind of brand of basketball. So
they were beating teams in shootouts last year.
Exactly.
That was their main thing. Exactly. Like I said, fourth in scoring. They were one of the best teams.
So while it was hard to do at the time, and you know, I don't think I did, I can't say that I had the foresight to say this. Sounds like you didn't either. I'm sure a lot of people didn't at the time last year. You know, you couldn't look at that team and say, this is all going to be a disaster come playoff time. But looking back on it now, the signs were there. The signs were there. That Lou Williams kind of basketball doesn't work in the playoffs. That's when you need defense. That's when you need to be able to get stops. You look at the team this year. This is a team that can get stops when it has to. What really makes me optimistic right now, and I don't think they're going to win the championship. I don't think they're an Eastern Conference Finals lock or anything like that.
I do.
But what makes me optimistic right now is the fact that you have this different look, and more importantly, during this 8-game win streak, your bench is producing, and that was always going to be the difference. Lowry and DeRozan are always going to produce, but the fact that you can get stops and you can get production from Ross and Patrick Patterson makes a huge difference. If this is sustainable and what I see now looks sustainable to me, then that's a team that can make, at least compared to last year, a lot more noise in the playoffs.
Okay, so I'll say this right now is that for me, again, it still feels eerily similar. And I have a couple of things I like a lot more and a couple things I don't.
But the games themselves are completely different.
They are.
You know what I mean? Like the way they're playing seems different.
Right. They were still relying on backcourt scoring to kind of get it done for them.
But I think you're seeing a lot less, or at least it feels that way, less one-on-one or one-on-five kind of stuff from the backcourt guys. You're seeing a lot more pick and roll incorporated.
Okay. This is where and you know what? I thought if someone didn't have a chance to read it, but Zach Lowe did a good write-up on the Raptors a couple of weeks ago that I really enjoyed. And he talked about that, just how, and I agreed, is that the one thing that I like on offense, especially this year, is that they're less of a jump shooting team, that they are way more prone to go to the basket, and they're getting easier baskets. and they're working harder to get them. And you're right. Like, but it is still those two guards going at it. The difference here, though, is, and why I feel so much more confident this year, is that one is that you mentioned is the defense. They're top 10 in offense and defense this year. They're a much more balanced team. There's only four other teams that are in that fit that mold. They're mm-hmm. You want to guess who they are?
Yeah, Golden State, San Antonio, Cleveland, and Thunder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only other teams that fit that bill. Mm-hmm. And then the Hawks are close. They're almost right on the bubble there. I think they're 11th in defense, so they're just missing the cut.
Pretty nice company.
But that's what I mean. You're in with a good group. And so I'm really excited this year. The difference is that it does really feel like DeMar DeRozan's taken on a whole new persona. And I'm actually glad, speaking of that Clippers game off the top, that Luke Mabute was a bit able to slow him down a little bit, because it's like, okay, now DeMar is human. Like, there are actually some possessions where DeMar was not able to just beat his guy off the dribble, go to the basket and draw a foul or finish at the cup.
The kind of continued evolution of DeRozan has been super fun to watch and pretty rewarding. We've all seen him since the beginning, and it's hard to imagine that guy's a rookie as the guy he is now. I mean, he's just taking over games for huge stretches. And like you said, defenses, he's a problem. Like, he's a matchup nightmare for other guards. The way the Raptors are using him are really smart. You know, teams don't post up their two guards, and the Raptors know that with DeRozan, you have to, because it's so advantageous to you.
So that's where I'm at this year, is that, one, I'm a lot more confident than DeMar DeRozan. Like, honestly, like, we've talked before about how we think that the market over-scouts and over-criticizes DeMar, but I've been totally guilty of being one of those guys that has said, I don't believe that you can build a team around DeMar DeRozan. And I've already flip-flopped this year just based on the way he's played and the way he's improved on my stance about giving DeMar that max deal, right? So the things that I'm most comforted by is that the defense looks like it's at least something you can build around. Sure, they do have their off nights. The other thing is DeMar. And then the other thing I would say is that they're playing up to their competition. Sometimes they've had a tendency to play down to their competition, but
the Raptors
lately it's been like, you know, they've beat the Thunder this year. They beat the Clippers again. Mm-hmm. They've beat Cleveland. They've gone toe to toe with Golden State. Yep. They beat the Spurs. Like, they've beat some legit competition. And that's something that I really like. The only thing I would say that kind of scares me, where I view this year's team a little bit different, is you mentioned the bench scoring and you think that it's sustainable. And while I am comforted by what we've seen, like Terrence Ross again lately, like he's shooting his jumper with confidence right now.
Yeah, no, he's in a nice groove.
He looks really good right now. Someone on NBA Reddit threw up a really funny thing of with headband versus without headband. And Terrence Ross needs to keep his headband on. I can't remember exactly.
I wrote like a 1,500 word ode to Lowry's headband when he wore it last year and got a triple double.
Yeah,
I'm all about the more headbands in sports, the better.
I just think that for me, last year, the one thing you really could rely upon until really the end of the season, which was disappointing against the Wizards, was that you were going to be able to bring in guys that could give you buckets on the odd night. Lowry and DeRozan weren't giving it to you. The positive thing is that Lowry and DeRozan have been giving it to you every single night, but they're still logging a lot of minutes, and you're wondering how that's going to wear on them at the end of the year. And as of right now, I think we've kind of settled into what Corey Joseph is as a player. The guy that we saw in the first month of the season who was getting to the basket and scoring, and I think he was averaging somewhere around 10 points a game. That's not the guy that we're...
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's still a guy who he's maybe more than any other player, any other kind of meaningful player, is one guy who hasn't found his stride yet or his absolute role.
Defensively, he's there, though. It's just that I don't trust his shot.
Offensively, yeah.
Like, even when he's...
And if you ever go to practice, constantly, practice is over, everyone's out of the gym, it's Corey Joseph and Jerry Stackhouse just putting up shots. I mean, that's that's something that they've addressed, like an area of need where he needs to get better, needs to make a bigger impact.
But one of the things with him, though, when he was coming in, was that his catch and shoot stats were through the roof.
But, you know, those are probably wide open looks.
Defenses are leaving Corey Joseph. Like, I don't think that when it comes to shooting, like, teams are gapping him. They know that that's a guy who wants to get into the paint off the bounce and put that floater up off the glass and finish in traffic. And teams are kind of taking that away from him. Terrence Ross, same thing. Like, I like Terrence Ross the way he's playing lately, but as of right now, and especially since he's disappeared the last 2 years in the playoffs, he's a guy that I'm not really counting on. And the same thing goes for the Patterson three. Like, some nights it's there. Is there anybody who just drains threes and shoots as many air balls as Patrick Patterson in the NBA? Like,
he just clangs them
or it's just a beautiful fluid stroke that doesn't hit rim.
He's a complete rhythm shooter.
So I would say that I am more confident in this group. I really like the way that they play defense. I don't think that there's going to be a drop-off in the second half that was quite like last year's.
No, because also, like, I think they're still, Valanciunas has played really well. They're still working him back in. You're going to get DeMarre Carroll back in probably March at some point, work him back in. So you're going to be adding pieces. You're going to continue to get better. But it does all revolve around Lowry and DeRozan, and that's, I love the defense.
That's a good thing.
I love that
right
the bench is showing up now. But more than anything, I love that these guys are doing their job and being consistent with it. And, you know, you mentioned how the Raptors team relies a lot on those guys driving, getting the basket. And that's a huge asset. Like, that's not a problem. That's a good thing because they're getting to the rim, they're drawing fouls, and they're both making them. I mean, Lowry's like at 88% on the season. Yep. DeRozan's right up there. Their attempts are huge. I mean, these two guys attempt...
Just about everybody on the team can shoot free throws.
I think they attempt something like 60% of the team's free throws, those two guys. And that coming from your backcourt...
And then the third guy is Biz. I think Biz is second on the team in free throws attempts. Really? I think he's ahead of Lowry, actually.
It's a disruptive way to go about your offense, and it takes other teams out of their rhythm. It just causes problems. I like what I'm seeing. I think
I can feel the same way in terms of at this point. Mm-hmm. I feel like they are a team that should get out of the first round, should have home court. Like the large picture aspects are pretty similar for me. Or it's like even when they were going into that Washington series, there's not a soul that thought like, oh, this is, do you remember you and I were debating what the better matchup was? And a lot of people thought Washington, who had struggled heading into the playoffs as well, was going to be a team that the Raptors were going to be able to kind of handle.
Nobody saw last year coming, and it was that's what made it such a gut punch is that that's no kinda, one had talked themselves into that possibility.
That's what I mean. At this point of the year, I still view it as the Raptors are going to be, they're not going to be a runaway favorite in the first round. They could end up with somebody like Detroit. Right. They could end up with someone like Boston. They're going to have to grind. It's going to be a 6-7 game series.
I think it's all going to come down to matchup. You think about last year in the West, everyone thought the Spurs were going to make another run to the finals. And what happened? First round, they ran into the wrong team who matched up. You know, couldn't match up well with them, and look what happened. They were gone first round. It's all about matchups. What I like, though, more right now than last year was the fact that you got guys who you can throw out defensively and say, go try to lock this guy up, go try to slow this guy down. And that's something they just did not have.
You don't
last
need
season.
To score 110 points a game to win anymore.
Yeah. I mean, who's coming off your bench and protecting the paint like Biombo last year? Who's coming off the bench and doing what Joseph can do on a point guard?
Yeah, and I would
just
say
that dynamic.
Scola has filled in pretty admirably, especially offensively, for what you lost in Amir Johnson. No, I'm just saying that you lost Amir Johnson, but gaining Scola and Biombo, I think, is a pretty net gain if you look at it that way.
No, definitely.
They're a team that right now I feel like, again, positives, good Eastern Conference team, rolling right now. I think they can beat anybody on a given night, but in a 7-game series, they still have a lot to prove. They could be a team that gets knocked out in the first round. They could be it, but I still don't feel confident in a 7-game series against the Atlantas, the Chicagos, the Cleveland.
I've always said there's two teams that I don't feel comfortable with that situation. Nothing's changed on that end. Cleveland, Chicago.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're biting on Cleveland's heels in the East standings for whatever that's worth, which is probably not much.
I sound like a buzzkill here. I'm excited. People should be excited about this team, but
if we had this
it's
conversation
very similar
during,
to what it was last year.
Yeah, I mean, we are having this conversation in the midst of an 8-game winning streak. The morning after, we're taping this on a Monday, the morning after they blew out the Los Angeles Clippers, a very good team from the West. So if I sound optimistic, that's why. You know, that's probably a big reason why. Okay, listen. I think technically the halfway point of the season came last week.
Yeah, I think it was like last Wednesday.
But, you know, we run on our own schedule here on Free Association.
Listen, we do our own thing.
And as far as we're concerned, the midseason is now.
We won't be rushed. We had Robert Horry in studio for an hour.
Yeah, we weren't gonna be.
What do you want from us?
We're only human. But so listen, I want to get to some midseason awards because at this point, the picture is pretty clear on some fronts. A lot of people think Steph Curry, complete lock for MVP. But maybe some people have other opinions on the MVP debate.
Maybe some contrarians.
Also, do they still do the comeback player?
Yeah. Okay. No, that's not an NBA award. Most improved and they do sixth man.
All right. Well, we'll get into that all on the other side of this with none other than Tim McCall of Tim and Sid. This is Free Association.
This is Robert Horry, 7-time NBA champ, and you listen to Free Association.
they get paid to work at a bingo hall.
Oh, well, then we really we know exactly.
Josh, are we rolling right now?
That's my role. That's my line every time I say, like, when I'm going to get fired, I'm going to be a bingo caller.
So you made good money then? You were like,
no, I get like $50 a shift. But they do get paid.
That's still pretty good. $50 a shift for a bingo caller. Like, I totally would have thought that's free. Or someone who's like the son of someone in the home.
Yeah.
They get to, I guess, because the only two places you play are like a mess hall, like not even
no,
a mess hall.
No, they take it seriously in some spot.
And
what spots take it seriously?
I hear from my bingo insider that they're moving electronic these days.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, no more pens or the markers. No more stamping.
That seems like the biggest upside of the entire thing.
That's a fix. The fix is in. I wouldn't trust electronic bingo.
No way.
Nothing good ever comes from bingo. I think we all know that.
I already think the balls are weighted.
They have like Vegas where it's like $5,000 if you win.
High stakes.
And high stakes bingo.
I remember my... this is really important stuff, but I remember my grandmother once won a bingo and bought a rug. So who says
that was a big day for her, eh?
Who says bingo doesn't pay?
That's really good. No one, actually. Everyone said bingo pays. That's the whole gist of it.
Well, listen, for those who like to gamble, is bingo even gambling?
Yeah, definitely. Of course. Yeah, you bet money on
it. All right. So for those who like to gamble, everyone puts the prop bets out before the season on the awards. And looking at my choices, at least right now, a lot of these I probably could have picked before the season started. You know, I don't know how much has changed over the course of the season, but I want to get right into it because we are at the unofficial halfway point. I think we technically passed it a little bit.
Yeah, you can get more bingo talk on Tim and Sid later today. I'm pretty sure that's going to be on there.
I'll be honest, I don't care about these awards anymore. I just want to talk bingo. But I got a job to do. We're professionals. We're going to trudge on here.
We're not paid to do this. So,
I didn't even realize we were rolling, so who cares?
We're rolling. Yeah, it's happening.
We just keep the mics going. Obviously, you've picked up by now that Tim McAuliffe is here in studio. Tim McAuliffe from Tim and Sid, 5 to 7 weeknights on Sportsnet. Also, shout out Underhill.
I'm sure a couple people have seen it.
Shout out Railside.
Oh, wow.
Shout out The Crown.
Wow.
We've got a real...
are you neighborhood or
Underhill icon in here. I'm neighborhood by association.
All right.
I was just on the other side of the bridge.
All right.
As someone who's not from Ontario, I have no idea what was going on.
No, these are
there.
All very topical references.
They're like very Tim McAuliffe... like the Triple Crown was my local growing up. Like that's where the whole neighborhood went.
The Triple Crown was where,
for better or worse.
Hey, exactly.
Listen, Whitehorse UConn just got Rogers Hometown Hockey, so it's a big time for us too.
Oh yeah,
it was pretty huge. Yeah,
give us like an inside Whitehorse reference that only seven people will get.
We're
gonna balance it out here.
The best. Yeah, you know, I'll shout out Miles Canyon, which they couldn't have done on hometown hockey because it's the wintertime. But Miles Canyon, that's the spot for everybody in the summertime. You go to the bridge,
right.
You jump off, you hang out, you check out girls. That's your spot.
That's the most Whitehorse thing I've ever heard.
Shout out to Miles Canyon. Bridge jumping.
Bridge jumping in Miles Canyon.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, bridge and jumping off of a canyon into ice and cold water. Yeah, that's it. That's the thing to do.
How long does that last?
Like a week.
All right. Yeah. I was actually asking. I wasn't trying to be stereotypical.
And then it's dark as shit again, and it's just so you're like, all right, back to eating your vitamin D or whatever that your mom gives you, and so you don't kill yourself during the wintertime.
Sorrel
boots and all that jazz.
Well, I'm glad we've included everyone here. This is very friendly.
Where do you guys want to start? I think we should start with the most obvious one, although I think that you...
Are you talking about the MVP?
Yeah.
We'll just roll through it. We'll go MVP on down. This one, I assume everyone wants to say Steph Curry.
Because it's the right answer.
But...
No.
Let's find out. JD, well, we know what you think. Tim, who's your MVP this season?
I think it's Steph Curry.
Oh, man.
It's obviously Steph Curry.
Say, who do you... Well, I mean, you're the news here because if we both say Steph Curry and JD's looking at you like you're smoking something right now.
That was earlier.
Yeah, that was before the show. There's a kid in San Antonio named Kawhi Leonard.
He literally is a kid. He's 24 years old.
He's 24 years old. The NBA's best two-way player. A team that's almost just as good as the Warriors. Pretty much as good as the Warriors. And without him, they're not in this situation. And that's Kawhi Leonard. Now, you can't give him the MVP because it's clearly Steph Curry. But I just wanted to bring him up. He deserves some talk in this conversation.
JD said to me, he goes, maybe we'll talk about who should be second in the MVP voting because it was near consensus that Steph was.
In that case, I think it's clear-cut Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, like I wrote down, the one I wanted to throw into the mix is DeMarcus Cousins because the Kings are actually playing some sort of basketball.
They're in the, they have a playoff spot right now. His numbers in January, he's leading the league in scoring. He's leading the league in rebounding.
Right.
I think blocks, maybe.
No, really? Rebounding. Rebounding is Drummond.
Well, he's right up there in a ton of stuff. He's killing it right now.
He's top five in scoring and rebounding on the year. And the Kings are in a playoff spot, which I don't think any of us would have thought starting the year, right?
Yeah.
But, and the one thing I'll throw, the one negative is his field goal percentage. For a big, he's got to shoot a better, he's got to shoot a better rate.
Shooting under 50%, and he's 7 feet tall.
Well, I think he's shooting over triple teams and double teams.
I think it's the three-point shooting that's really his bane. No one's reeling him in, telling him not to shoot threes. I think he's taking four a game.
And I think the proof is in the wins, right? Like, I think they need him to do so many things on that team that he does shoot a bad percentage. But I want Kawhi Leonard, for me, if you're a near consensus defensive player, like, I don't know, maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but if you're a near consensus defensive player of the year and you're doing what you're doing offensively, like, I don't know if he exists on a different team or under different circumstances, but he is as valuable as anyone in the league. And out, like, if you said, like, one guy on your team that's good already, I would say Kawhi Leonard ahead of Steph Curry. And I might say Jimmy Butler ahead of Steph Curry. Like, if you have a good team and you're adding a guy, just so invaluable.
So,
and also, with Leonard, I just want to add in that he's, you know, you talk about a guy who gets better year over year. His 3-point shooting this year, he's at like close to 50, I think 48%.
He shoots 48% and he's taking four a game. And before this season, his career best was 38% and he shot two a game.
He rebounds. So he's running their fast breaks. Like, when they go 3-on-1 or 3-on-2, like, he's the one facilitating that. He's just doing everything for them. And
he's one of the better pull-up shooters in the game. I think, what's the site that Nate Silver does? 538. I never remember the title. But they basically said that if you look at his numbers, you break it down into percentiles, like where he ranks percentiles in rebounding, where he ranks percentiles in shooting.
Yeah.
The closest comparison you can make to Kawhi is 1985 Larry Bird, which is crazy because he won the MVP that year and it was nuts. And if you ever have a chance, go look at Larry Bird's basketball reference page. It's pretty fun to look at that. Okay, I got to say to Steph, though, that he's the MVP, okay? And the case of, like, why he's not, or whether you take him on a different team, I would say that I wouldn't, just because he's more so even than, like, I caught Michael more at the tail end, I'll admit. Like, I was a kid watching basketball for the early Michael years. So effective with 95, 96 teams, I've never seen a player like Steph Curry that's this unguardable. He's taking over half of his shots from three. He's leading the league in win shares. He's taking shots in the lane that, like, have you ever seen anybody that's got these types of circus shots, this type of ball handling mixed with off the dribble shooting? No. It's just, he's so unguardable and he forces you to change so much on your defense and put so much pressure on your guys that I it's hard pressed for me to say that. And let's not forget, his team won 24 games in a row to start the year. I know the Spurs have been impressive, but, like, this is a pretty historical run that Steph Curry's put together here.
Well, it's more like you look at the games that Steph Curry had to sit out. I think it was two so far.
Yeah.
And that's where you really realize
how valuable he is.
Just how much he kind of does make everything.
My other runner-up, though, quickly.
Is it Draymond?
I got to say, I would take Draymond ahead of DeMarcus Cousins. I wrote down something quick about Draymond. So he's averaging 15, 7, and 10 with 40% shooting from three, which is just absurd, especially since he's one of the best defensive players in the league. Only four non-guards have ever finished with an average of 7 or more assists per game. Larry Bird, John Havlicek, LeBron, and Wilt. Like, he's one of the most competitive players in the league.
And Wilt did it for spite.
I think that he's the engine of that team, and it's just, I love the way Draymond is.
Can I throw something into the mix with the Warriors that I think it just needs to be laid on the table if it's not already acknowledged, is that both those guys don't exist anywhere else, and maybe not even in basketball. Like, in the history of basketball, no one has been allowed to do what Steph does.
That's why the Warriors are so deadly, because you can't replicate it. Like, you've never seen it before. We probably won't see it again. It's not just Draymond and Curry. You're right. Those two are so unique. To get them on the same team is one in a million chance. But then add Klay Thompson to that mix. Like,
Bogut. Like, I think Bogut doesn't get enough credit on that team.
Definitely doesn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he's super underrated as, like, a facilitator out of the post. So you got, like, the perfect storm of a lot of things happening there. Iguodala, you know, I mean, just the way he's been able to fit in and kind of mold his game to that team. I mean, they're just, it's a special team, and Curry's kind of the head of the dragon.
Curry, though, you just know that like high school and junior high coaches just hate him because now every
because
how many kids get benched because they're just like, well, I saw Steph Curry shoot from 4 feet behind the 3-point line off the dribble going left, fading away, and he could do it, so I'm trying to do it too.
I talk about that with like coaches and ex-players all the time. The fact that like AAU is
probably
being,
prefer the LeBron James
being ruined
model
by,
than Steph Curry.
By Steph Curry, because what people don't realize is like, yeah, you need that natural talent is a big part of it, and all the reps. You can't just start shooting like that when you're 14.
Defensive player, you guys both seem to think it's a runaway for Kawhi.
Yeah, but I would, if he didn't get hurt, I would have given it to Rudy Gobert, because I really think if you, even if you look at the numbers, he just, there's not another guy who just shuts down the basket like that. Like, I know Whiteside gets the stats, but Gobert, if you look at like people's shooting percentages against him in the paint, they just, he's just a monster. But he was hurt for a while, and Utah's not that good, so I'm going with Kawhi.
I would have thrown, I'm going Kawhi. I would have thrown Hassan Whiteside into the mix just because
he just seems like a numbers guy to me.
Yeah, the numbers are respectable.
Very.
I'm going the other way. I'm going back to Draymond. this is going to be a big Draymond love fest for me. I know on-off stats aren't perfect, but you look at what he's asked to do in their system defensively, and it's more, he's got more on him to do than I think Kawhi Leonard does. Kawhi Leonard does defend the best player against the Spurs just about every single night, but so does Draymond, but it's more flexibility. And like, I'm watching them play the Pacers the other night, and Draymond's on Paul George. Mm-hmm. And it's like tonight's game, when you watch them play the Spurs, like we're taping this on a Monday, he's going to get time where he's going to be on Kawhi, and then he's going to get other times where he's going to be defending LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah.
His flexibility and the way that they can employ their switching on defense with him is, again, like we've said, he's a guy that hasn't existed before on another team, the way that he defends multiple positions. And again, I know these stats aren't perfect. They're still working them out, but his on-off stats are like jaw-dropping. So the Warriors have a 99 defensive rating when he's on the court. It goes down to 111 when he's off. That's in contrast to Kawhi, who is 94-6 on, 97-2 off. Mm-hmm. Defensive rebounding stays the same when Kawhi's off. Drops off by 7% when Draymond's
off. What are the
on before
numbers? Because I believe the offs are, sometimes that's a product of how bad your team is
bad
or
team.
How bad your team is defensively. What are the on numbers for Kawhi and Draymond? That's interesting.
So, yeah. So on numbers for Kawhi is 94-6.
Yeah.
And Kawhi, I believe, has a defensive rating of 92 individually.
Right.
So, like, he's obviously bumping that up. 97.2 off. So that's my only thing is I think the Spurs are a lot better defensively as a unit. Like,
right.
I think that their team as a whole, they've got a lot better defenders. And it's proven by the fact that that's a historically good defensive team. They're number one in the NBA in defensive rating. And I think they're third all time. Like, they're a generational defensive team. Whereas I think Draymond, he's the one guy on his team that just keeps, that holds them up, that takes them from that level of good defense to great defense. And so his stats, again, were 99 on, 111 off. 7% drop in defensive rebounding when he's off, too. He's a guy they really rely on to get the ball off missed shots.
And it's sore, but it's been said so much, but like the fact that this dude was a second-round pick is unfathomable.
And that the Raptors wanted him? Ugh.
But how much do you think
would he exist in Toronto?
Nah, probably not.
No.
I think he still would be a good player, but he's not the same. Like, this is a great
team. They wouldn't
use
him the same. Like, you need to have the guys around you to force you into kind of a certain role. But I wonder how much of his success comes from the whole, like, I was overlooked and I'm going to prove everyone wrong. Because he's pretty incessant about it. Like,
wasn't he a guy in college, though? Like, there's been a couple of guys that
he was the best player on
the
Final Four team.
Yeah.
Right. Like, there's been a couple guys throughout the years that when they've gone in the second round of the draft, I've been like, really? Second round? Like, Chandler Parsons was one of those guys.
I wonder how much this Warriors team is going to change scouting in terms of the way people think, how they can utilize pieces.
Honestly, like, I think the NBA, and this would take us in a completely different tangent, but your defensive flexibility, I think, is like the buzzword of the new millennium,
right?
Is that Tristan Thompson, that Draymond Green, that big who can switch and you're not like, oh, geez, we're in deep.
We're dead now.
Yeah, we're dead every time this guy switches.
Versatility.
Which is why the Mozgovs, which is why the Valanciunas is, like, those guys are becoming less prominent. But the other part of this is, like, think of the guys that we're throwing out there in that mix. Draymond Green, second round pick. Steph Curry's, like, he's not a first overall pick. Like, he developed into what he is. Jimmy Butler, Kawhi Leonard, like,
Jimmy Butler was 27th.
All of these guys existed beyond the, like, can't miss, top five. Like, and now you look around the league and you're like, oh my God, these are the best players in the league because they were developed. And I think the NBA needs to take a long, like, a long, hard look at the Warriors or Spurs and say, like, we're going to name a bunch of these guys here that weren't top five picks.
Yeah.
And some of them were second round picks.
Yeah, again,
Draymond's a great example.
I think so much of it goes back to culture of the team too, right? Like you look at Jimmy Butler, it's like, where did he get drafted? The Chicago Bulls. Who was his coach? Tom Thibodeau. Look at where Draymond and Steph were drafted. Like Golden State didn't really have that winning culture before, but they brought in the right guys. They brought in Steve Kerr, who's a like perennial championship guy. Their ownership group really decided to get behind winning at like pretty much right around the time that they brought him in. They ended up getting Klay Thompson too, which was pretty much a stroke of luck because the Kings traded up for a shooting guard and took Jimmer Fredette ahead of him, which is like one of the all-time draft gaffes. Like that's just plain awful. So I think winning culture is a lot of it, but these dudes
all Jimmer needed was to get drafted to the Warriors and he would have been Steph Curry.
Yeah, he got to the Spurs way too late.
I was going to say he got his crack with the Spurs. I always wanted Jimmer to be in the league cuz he was always my argument for why Brady Heslip should be in the league. Well, if Jimmer's in, then Brady Heslip
speaking of white guys, the guy I never understood why he couldn't make it, and it might be kind of between his ears more than anything, was Adam Morrison. Man, I was so sold on Adam Morrison as an NBA prospect.
He's
another guy, third overall.
I'll admit to my mistakes. Like I've said, I like Derek Williams more than I like Kyrie Irving, but I was never sold on a diabetic who played in a weak conference and didn't like to shower
drawn to that.
Speaking of winning culture.
Wonder.
Coach. Coach of the year so far.
Okay, this is one where I'll just go first here. I'm going Rick Carlisle.
I'm with you.
Oh, man.
I'm with you on Rick
Carlisle. That was my big wild card pick. But basically, you know, I think a lot of that Dallas success comes from kind of resurgent Dirk. You know, his numbers aren't that different, but you're seeing kind of a guy who's looking super comfortable the way he's taking over late games. But when you look at the rest of that roster, the way Carlisle's got these guys all kind of buying in and playing well, I think that's the biggest reason for why they're in a position to possibly have home court in the playoffs. And I thought they'd be left for dead at the beginning of the season.
We thought at the beginning of the year, we did our preview pod, and we both had Dallas out of the playoffs.
I think
we were looking at their
roster,
and we were just like, this is a disaster.
Right.
Like, how are they going to win any games?
Right.
Dirk's 37. They're going to start Ray Felton. They're going to play Ray Felton and Darren Williams, who was a corpse in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Like,
still
the Parsons contract looked terrible. Like, it looked like that was a real miss. They missed out on DeAndre Jordan, and so they had to scramble, and they signed JaVale McGee and Zaza Pachulia. Like, that's the thing for me is I look at this team and they've got three new starters, and they were basically, two of them were scrap heap guys and one was Wes Matthews. And then they, like, I think Pop is deserving. I think Luke Walton at this point would deserve a lot of consideration. But the thing that kind of kills me with coaches is that, like, when you have that much talent, and they're like, when Steve Kerr came back, I don't know if you saw his first game back, the play-by-play guys are like, and, you know, Steve said the decisions late in the game were the same decisions I was going to make. And it's like, well, yeah, you have like six of the best, like 25 players on the planet. It's not like that hard to be like, you know what? Steph should be in here in crunch time. Like, this is the way we got to do with it. Rick Carlisle, when he looks down his bench, like, he's got to decide, like, am I going Ray Felton or Devin Harris? Am I going JaVale McGee or Charlie Villanueva? And they're on pace for like close to 50 wins. They're fifth in the East.
Yeah,
like,
Charlie Vegas, legitimate minutes on that team.
That's what I mean. Like, their team is just full of bums. Like, I got, he's the guy for me.
When the Raptors beat the Mavs early in the season, I was like, it's not as good a win as everyone's making it out to be. And now I look back and go, listen, if you're Rick Carlisle and you create a phrase that actually makes sense and it's the resurgent Zaza Pachulia, you're doing well.
Yeah.
Like, I'll sign up for that.
My argument's over right
there. Yeah, it's almost, but I'll just say this. Pop, last week, I shook my head. They play the Suns, and here's what he does. He sits Parker and Duncan. So two of his regular bench players are starting in that game. He got 66 points from his bench, and they blew out the Suns. I always get it wrong, but it's Marjanovic.
Marjanovic.
It feels like the J should be a Y if I'm studying my foreign
as a guy whose
languages.
First name is Giannis. Like, I gotta defend the Marjanovic.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. So 17 and 13, and Jonathan Simmons has 13, and those are the leading scorers. And you're like,
who are these guys?
Who the bleep are these guys?
And same story, yeah.
And it's just Pop. Like, I think we're so spoiled with Pop that you guys want to give it to Carlisle because it's not Pop, but like what he does every year, like Duncan is is an old man who was amazing and understands, but the way he assimilates people to their system
right.
and gets the most repeatedly out of them, like I don't want to dismiss it
yeah,
in this spot.
I think you're right. The tendency is like same old pop.
Yeah, you want to learn someone else. Like, oh, it's the same when LeBron was MVP for year after year after year. You wanted to be like, I mean, anyone but LeBron.
With pop, you think like, oh, it's the system and, you know, guys come into it. But to bring on a guy like Aldridge on board, to bring this Boban guy in and give him a pretty serious role. You mentioned John Simmons.
Okay, so but that
does speak volumes. Like,
but how much
right
do you
that.
Give?
Like you're talking about Charlie V and your laughing and Zaza. It's the same thing, but it's pop.
Right. The only thing I would say that I think is a little bit different in their situations is that, and I'm not trying to take credit away from Pop. I think he's a generational coach. He's unbelievable. But he's also got a partner in R.C. Buford, who's like hands down been hailed as the best executive in the entire
chicken
NBA.
Chicken and egg, right?
Right. So I just think that it's like, I think that when you have both of these guys and they're able to identify a guy like Jonathan Simmons, that R.C. Buford is able to go out and be like, you know what? This guy has, or even when it's Sacramento, they look at CJ McCollum, or not CJ McCollum, sorry, why am I blanking on this guy's name? The guard. Anyway, who
Anderson,
cares?
Kyle Anderson?
No, that was a draft pick. They snipped somebody from Sacramento this year. I'm blanking on his name, but it just-
Ray McCallum,
that's it. So where it's just like you have the ability as that executive to be like, you trust your coach, you know that he can develop these guys, but you know the right guys to bring into Pop. Whereas, like I said, I don't think that when you're bringing in dudes like Zaza Pachulia, yes, he probably would have success in San Antonio because it's, again, winning culture. But I think what Carlisle is getting out of these dudes this year is just, it's unbelievable. Like I said, Darren Williams, like they have one guy averaging 17 points a game. It's 37-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, right now, halfway through, I'm giving it to Carlisle, but no one's going to put up an argument against Popovich. He's just, it's because you're right. Buford put the team together, but it's the day-to-day stuff that Pop continues to
do.
You
just talked about
really
Kawhi, right?
Yeah. Right.
Like, yeah. What developed. Kawhi has developed
into. How do you think
into,
that happened?
Yeah. Another guy, by the way, when you're speaking of dudes that get developed in the right place. Kawhi was, what, 15th overall? Yeah. Like, not a top 10 pick even.
Where he went is a huge part of his story, no question. Okay, let's move on to Sixth Man of the Year.
I don't like this award.
Yeah, me too. I hate it.
We're handing some most improved and sixth man. I struggle with every time. I will say this: if you want to go off, the kind of beaten path for sixth man, Tristan Thompson for me is a guy that you could look at as someone who affects the game as soon as he comes into it.
That's interesting.
And he might get starts, but the same things that you were talking about on off numbers, the idea of having that flexibility. If you wanted to throw the curveball on sixth man of the year, I think Tristan Thompson could be a guy. Like, you can throw Will Barton, Andre Iguodala.
That's the thing, though, right? They never give it to guys that don't have, like, tangible
numbers,
scoring numbers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The sixth man of the year award should just be called best bench scorer. Like, that's who
oftentimes
it goes to.
It is that.
That's what it is just about every single year. Like, they're
like
not
Lou
giving
Will,
it to.
Right?
Right.
And then they let him walk.
And exactly. And he goes, and not only do they let him walk, every team in the NBA basically passes on him. You think Lou Williams' best choice was to go to LA on like a 2-year deal for $6 million a pop? Like, no, that's probably not what he had in mind.
Right.
So, I actually like the Tristan Thompson pick. It's a good one.
Who do you got, JD?
I was kind of torn. I went with Will Barton. I just think that I end up tuning into an abnormal amount of Nuggets games because of that Raptors pick. And I just cheer against them just basically every night. I'm watching the Nuggets and I just tune in and he was a guy that just basically right away just started popping off the screen. I'm just like, isn't that the guy they traded? The Blazers gave them like basically just to facilitate like contract wise when they stole, like whether they borrowed Aaron Aflalo last year. The thing I like is his numbers are nice. Like, I think he's like got about 16 and 6. The rebounding is what's most impressive to me with that guy is that he averages 6 rebounds a game and he's 6'5" and a 185. Like, he's a very instinctive player. He's probably the second most important player on their team after Danilo Gallinari. He's a winner. He's just one of those guys that you want to have on your team. He seems to relish the moment. They went toe-to-toe with the Warriors a couple of weeks ago, and it was basically him versus the Warriors keeping them in it. It was one of those non-Steph Curry games. But still, he forced them to overtime because it's a guy that, again, is handling the ball going coast to coast.
He's been a revelation.
He's been another really good example
of a guy who you have to land in the right situation where they gave him an opportunity that he obviously wasn't getting in Portland, and he's taking advantage of it. For me, we've talked about this before. If you want to know why Will Barton is a success this season, you just have to look at all the work he puts in the summers leading up to this. Like, he's not an accident. This isn't an accident. This guy, Tim, I don't know if you know about Hell's Trainer.
No, Frank, I don't. I don't know anything about that.
Frank, a.k.a. Hell's Trainer. He's the most intense trainer in pro sports. I do. I do.
You're like, you like basically read his business card. He's the most intense trainer.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Years ago. This guy, first of all, he won't be seen. Like, you can't take a picture of him unless he has a full-on ninja mask on.
Right.
He's always there with his husky. Like, he's like a real eccentric character. He doesn't believe in weights. He doesn't believe in any of that stuff. His stuff is, you come to San Francisco, I'm going to put this pack, this 200-pound pack on your back,
right,
and you're going to do sprints up the sand hill, like, yeah, in sand up to your... up to the top of your shins.
That used to be known as Walter Payton and Jerry Rice.
Right. It's, yeah, exact, it's the exact type of stuff. So he gets like every year, and players will come, I don't know name, but players will come and quit after 5 minutes,
right,
3 minutes, just be like, you know, F this, this is, yeah, not what I want. I'm spending,
dude,
my summer.
I don't need this dude with a husky telling me what to,
exactly,
do.
Exactly. Yeah. Like barking at me.
This dude with a husky.
I don't need two
in California,
at me,
too. Like, what's your problem, guy? Like,
yeah,
get a,
in
get
White
a,
Horse, okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
In California,
exactly.
Shut
I know
that husky.
People with kennels.
Yeah, there's no bridge jumping here, JD. But so he's got guys like Will Barton. Zach Randolph is another one of the guys who's always worked with him.
Should work a little harder with Zach Randolph.
But no, but it shows you why he's able to still kind of play while he's older. So anyways, that kind of mentality to go, right, through that, I think that explains a lot of Will Barton. Now he's just got his
opportunity. They're way better than anyone thought, or they should be, really. Oh, like, man, you look at them and you're like,
Denver, they're a tough out every night. I
every
never
night.
Saw that coming.
Every
I knew
night,
they'd always be tough at home, but yeah, no one saw Will Barton. No one saw Danilo Gallinari not getting hurt yet. That's the one thing I keep waiting for. I'm like, when will Danilo get hurt?
Yes, wait.
The, okay, other one that you hate, most improved. Let's do it quickly. Let's fly through this one because this one sucks. I agree. It's a terrible.
You guys don't like most improved? I like comeback player.
But it's just such a hard thing to gauge. Like,
is that the,
like,
same thing?
No, it's up for.
Like, oftentimes?
Comeback. No, like, comeback player would go to Paul George.
Yeah, of
most
course.
Improved would go to a guy who got a lot better. This is the one that I had the hardest time with because there's a lot of.
I'll say mine quickly. I picked Andre Drummond just because I thought that Andre Drummond was the guy that went from all-star kind of fringe player to elite center over a year. His scoring numbers are up. He's more efficient. His rebounding has gone from great or good to great. I just think that he's the guy that the reason that the Pistons are in the spot they're in right now is largely to do with him. And I know he missed, what was 23 free throws against the Rockets the other night, which is more than Steph's missed all year. But I still think that in terms of guys who have made the leap, he's the one that's been the most important. So I'll stick with Drummond.
Nice.
Tim, this is what Hell's Trainer looks like.
Yeah. I don't even know if I'd want to hang out with that dude.
I know for a fact.
By the way, don't sleep on Reggie Jackson while you're saying all that. I know he's supposed to because he got $80 million, yeah, yeah, but like, I feel like he's almost in that mix too. It takes away my Andre Drummond vote, honestly.
It does.
And the fact that he can't shoot free throws, which just bothers me as a person.
I know. It really is bad.
Yeah, that was my whole thing against DeAndre Drummond, which is like, if you got a guy who you can't keep on the floor late in games, how important can he really be to your team?
It's such a, I mean, it goes back to Shaq. It goes back
to
guys shooting free throws between their legs.
I think I saw Van Gundy say recently, though, that he shoots 70% in practice.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, like
so
that.
So it's all mental.
It's that he
so
gets in games and he
that
just starts
weak?
Fricking it. Oh, I don't know what it means. It means that, yeah, the
that
pressure
mean
gets to him.
That'd be an amazing conversation.
I'll ask him when they're in town.
You see that?
Or go like get like a sports psychologist.
Yeah.
Like, is that just like.
That's the only explanation I would have for it. Like, you all of a sudden in a pressure situation.
What does the sports psychologist say to him, though? They just do, like, I just imagine it's the same thing. Or they're like, go to your happy place and just. Let's block it all out. Yeah, like Happy Gilmore.
What's Andre
just like,
Drummond's happy
it's
place?
It's like Chubbs
go comes in. Yeah, go to your home.
Yeah, until Gene Simmons shows up in your nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably what happens to him.
Okay, so for most improved, I got like Drummond was on my list. Barton was on my list.
Yeah.
But if you look at Barton's numbers, when he got minutes at the end of last season, he put up these kind of.
That's why I didn't give it to CJ McCollum.
Two that it came down to for me. One is staying on the Nuggets is Gallinari. If you look at his numbers, career high, I mean, I don't think he's played the whole season, but he's at like 20 points a game. He'll get hurt again before the season's over, but he's, I think, another big reason why they're still a tough out. But the guy I want to go with is Kemba Walker.
Oh, interesting.
Recently off a 52-point performance. Yep.
Overtime. Asterisk.
I don't care.
Total asterisk.
Put up 52 in a game.
Yeah, you didn't need to mention that. Yeah. But so Kemba, his numbers are up like across the board. His scoring is up a bit, but what I like the most is his shooting percentage. It's up almost 10%, his three-point percentage, and he's shooting like 44% from the field. And Kemba's notoriously a super inefficient shooter. So I'm pointing to Kemba.
44% from the field Kemba is this year?
Yeah.
That's shocking to me.
Yeah, and he's like 38, 39% from three, and he used to be a 30% guy. So it's big. That's my guy.
I'll throw, just to throw a wrench into this and maybe start a conversation, I'm going to go to a guy that I've in his career hated with a rare passion for a player. Usually I'm just a player's guy. This guy I've never liked in my life. How about Carmelo Anthony for most improved player? And let me throw out why I think Carmelo Anthony is. He has turned into the player that everyone wanted him to be for his entire career at a time when most guys would never even ponder it. Like, he was going to retire chucking 30 and scoring 23. And that was going to be it. And he has turned into, like, for years, you know, like, I always say true superstars make them around, those around them better. Like, that's my definition. And I'm like, Carmelo's not a superstar. And they gave him a shot with Allen Iverson, who is in that mix too, about not making people around them better and not comprehending how to make your team better. And the Knicks are the Nuggets of the West. Like, they're a team, and Raptors have both their picks, which sucks for the Raptors.
Sucks so much.
But they're way better than anyone thought they would be. And Porzingis is cool, and I like watching Latvian hip-hop just as much as the next person. But I don't know if Porzingis exists if Carmelo doesn't defer a little, doesn't allow Porzingis to kind of spread his wings.
As a Latvian, I just want to say I disagree with everything you say. I think that it's all Porzingis. He's the only reason that Carmelo's having the resurgence. No, it's a really good point. Carmelo's been...
Like, even Porzingis early was shooting terrible percentages.
Yep.
And it was like, he's scoring 30 or he's scoring 25 and the numbers are down. But then I thought Carmelo was just like, there was like... a light, and I never thought that light would come on.
Porzingis doesn't get the spacing, or he gets more defensive focus too if Carmelo's not playing the way that he is.
Okay, well, let's stay with Porzingis for a second and go to Rookie of the Year. Let's go to you, JD.
I'd love to give it to him. I'd love to give it to 3-6 Latvia. Like, you wouldn't believe,
but
he is the I love him. Like, I do. He's just like my son. I watch him play, and he's like my son.
For the Latvian girl dabbing in the video.
Yeah, 100%. Like, same thing with when Zemgus Girgensons was big, and they made the rap song about him. I was down with that too.
All right, listen, there's no Maltese athletes, so move on. Right?
Yeah, you're good. Listen, Latvia gets one in a lifetime, and I'm like, this guy's gonna be such an embarrassment. He comes in the draft, and he actually turns out to be good. It's unbelievable. But I just. The other team that I love watching, the other bad team I love watching anyways, is the Timberwolves. And the reason I watch them isn't because of Andrew Wiggins anymore. I used to watch them because of that. And I don't think anybody really saw Towns coming out the way that he did out of college. Like, he was kind of hidden a little bit in Kentucky. They had so many guys, and Willie Cauley-Stein was almost a featured big that everybody kind of talked about when tough to play them because of his defense and his shot blocking. And Towns has just been, like, he's the most impressive prospect I've seen since LeBron James. And that counts Anthony Davis. Like, rookie season, guy I'm just like, wow, this guy is just can't miss, superstar. I'm not trading him for anybody. I'm legitimately not trading him for Anthony Davis. Like, truly. Even with Anthony Davis being under contract. I look at their two numbers side by side, their rookie seasons. His numbers are better than Davis's were when he was rookie. He's averaging nearly a double-double at 16 and 9.7 a game. He's getting 1.8 blocks, which is as many as Davis got his rookie year. He's shooting 53% from the floor and 39% from three, which is unbelievable. Like, he's one of the best pick and roll bigs already, and he's 19 years old. I'm fascinated by this dude. I think the ceiling is just it's so unbelievably high.
What stands out to me the most with Towns is just how comfortable and how assertive he is already. Like, he's not backing down from anyone. He's forcing the issue, and I wonder how much that obviously has to do with him and confidence in his ability. But hanging out with a guy like KG every day as a rookie who's in your ear the whole time, just kind of supporting you, telling you how good you are. Like, I think that plays a part of it. But yeah, he's been super impressive. Can't go wrong with him as a choice. Tim, what do you got?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. The one caveat I would throw into this mix is, and I'm looking at Andrew Wiggins too, is they got to start winning games.
I know, they really do.
Like, they have to start winning games because all of this, like, hey, these guys are really good.
Good stats, bad team.
Yeah.
You won't avoid that.
It's a plague in basketball. Good stats, bad.
They're one of those weird teams that blows it late in games. Like, they play tough. They're there, and then all of a sudden they're there in the fourth quarter and they collapse.
Literally, like, three decent wins in a row, right. And you're like, oh, okay, now they've turned the corner, and it's like, same old T-Wolves.
At the beginning of the year, I thought that they would legitimately contend for a playoff spot. Like, I thought they wouldn't make it quite, but they'd be one of those bubble teams that's just out. They had the Flip Saunders narrative going for them. The rookies, I thought Wiggins was going to take another step, and like, I don't want to get sidetracked here too much, and I know we're really tight for time, but haven't you been a little, like, I know the numbers kind of support he's having a good year, but haven't you been a little disappointed in Andrew Wiggins in year two? Like, he's not.
Started with Canada, too.
That's what I mean. And he was a guy that they were like, well, maybe the offense won't be there, but he's going to be one of the best defenders in the NBA. And
none of the numbers support that.
You watch him every night, and he's getting beat off the dribble by mediocre dudes. He can't fight through screens. I don't know.
I'm not worried about Wiggins. He's so young, and he's already at 20 a game. And he might just be a guy who can give you points and nothing else and maybe some good defense. And that's fine by me. I think he's going to be okay. Yeah, like, talk to me in a couple of years.
The development is so key now, and it's just, it's hard.
You want to avoid is being on a team like Minnesota, is getting those losing habits and all that kind of stuff.
Correct.
Because you know, that can get into your DNA early. But you know, you mentioned Minnesota as a team that doesn't win, and that's why I'm not going to give it to Towns, and I'm going to give it to Porzingis, who might not be, he's not as good a player as Karl Anthony Towns, but he's playing a big role on a team that is just a few games out of a playoff spot and chasing that. So in this case, I'm going to value winning over production. And I'm going to take Porzingis.
I hope New York doesn't screw Porzingis up. Like, I hope they don't make the superstar.
He seems so headstrong to me, though. That's more than anything on the court.
It's your typical Lavian right there. That's just
what New York in basketball, Toronto in hockey, like, they have these things of making superstars out of guys before they are, and then they believe the hype, and it ruins them.
Yeah, you got to worry about the sophomore slump, right? Generally, guys tend to take that dip in their second year.
Right now, halfway through the season, I'm going with Kristaps. It is a cool story.
Yeah.
And he's fun to watch. Last one here. I think that's all the real awards.
Real
GD, you wanted us to talk about the most, what you're most disappointed in.
Yeah,
player, team, open to interpretation.
Mostly just because I want to shit on the Rockets and take where, you know, I deserve this because I said that the Rockets were going to win 60 games this year and they're like 23-21.
Well, I just think James Harden just isn't a fun guy to be around, or at least to play with, and that emanates on the rest
of
the
team. But like now they're
getting good production from Dwight Howard. Like, he's playing all right.
But they're getting good production from James too. Like, he had like a triple double the other night. He's still
shooting from the floor.
I think he's
I think it's like 41%.
Yeah, he's not doing great. But he's a free throw guy, right? He's still, like, if you look at his numbers, like, we all say DeMar DeRozan gets the line so much, it's unbelievable. We watch him every night.
Yeah.
And still, like, it's a runaway. It's not even close with who's leading, like, free throw attempts every night. It's James Harden with his herky jerk style. You looked at their roster before the season and you were like, damn, like, this is a really complete team. I love the Ty Lawson pickup. And now they're, like, rumored to be fire sailing guys. They're like, we'll give you Ty Lawson for anything. It hasn't worked at all. They're shopping Jones, though, Terrence Jones, and he's a guy that if the Raptors could get that deal done, it would be a dude I would love
to
see.
So you're turning into this explaining why you thought they'd be a 50-win team. That's what you're doing right now.
60-win team.
60-win team.
Not 50. Yeah. I wish. You heard it right. 50-win. That's what I said.
Yeah, but that's what you're
There's
doing.
There's still
hope. Yeah, these guys are all good, but as a collective, they suck.
They do. I don't know what the hell's wrong with them. Like, it's Trevor Ariza, Terrence Jones, Monty Unis, Dwight Howard, Ty Lawson, Patrick Beverley, James Harden. Like, you've got all these guys who on paper look like they were a team that, again, what we were saying, buzz things about NBA right now is versatility, right? Yeah. Like, that's what you want from all your guys, is dudes who can play multiple positions or give you different looks and give you different lineups. And when I looked at that Rockets team, I was like, who's going to be more versatile than them? The Warriors. Maybe that's it. Boom.
Harden's turning into Carmelo.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Except for guys like playing with him even less. Like,
yeah, I'd rather play with Melo than Harden.
What's the what was the number on him?
Okay, so he's at 33% from three.
Yeah,
that's just unbelievable.
It was at 37.5 last year, 42% from the floor.
Yeah,
also a career low, except for his rookie year.
Oh, Jamesy, you're killing me, bud. You're killing me.
And it's just like,
I gotta wear this every day.
I know he's really good too, but I don't know about you guys. I don't enjoy watching him play. Like, for a guy who's that good, like, he's just he's a problem.
He's fun when he does the little cooking thing. That's
these guys existing in basketball is interesting, right? Like, it's just that it seems to be a sport where guys like that, like superstars who can't win and can't find either the coach to make those around them work with them, or like, it's just. And he's, like, falling down that. And Dwight's another guy. I mean, he might be doing better this year, but it's another guy where, like, okay, superstar. Well, where's his wins?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, where are the final appearances?
He got there once.
Yeah, one time.
There were that Courtney Lee alley-oop dunk from
Let's
maybe
be real. Haydu carried him to the finals.
Yeah, he did. Hey, Haydu was the man that year. God, I hate you, Rockets.
That's
like, when you're trading
deal.
For Josh Smith in the middle of the season to be like, we don't know what to do. We're trying to rekindle the magic. Like, you're in trouble. Like, that's a sinking ship.
All right, Tim, what's your most disappointing?
I was just, I guess I'm running the same line, but it's the Pelicans' inability to surround Anthony Davis with anything worthwhile, because I think that he's Like, he's in danger of wasting away in New Orleans right now.
What they're doing is
they got him under contract before the season
they're
started.
They're jeopardizing his megastar legacy.
Prime years, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we can't look back on history and say Davis was a good guy on a bad team who just put up numbers for the first 5 years of his career, whatever it is. That's going to be.
Said it's the same team that he had last year that he muscled into the eighth spot. Like, there's some of it's on him, too.
Well,
right?
Yeah. I mean, he's been in another lineup. You know, Eric Gordon's a guy I really like who just can't stay healthy, can't find his niche on that team. Anderson's played really well, but it's not enough for.
If that's a good, if that's your second best player on the team,
he should be your fourth, fifth best guy.
Listen, right. Tyreek Evans beat Steph Curry for Rookie of the Year. So the guy who,
but he's just not a good basketball player.
Just kidding. That doesn't matter. that's such a thing where if you look back in time and you're like, hey, Steph Curry, did he win Rookie of the Year? No, Tyreek Evans.
There's a theme though, right? Yeah. Like guys that develop versus guys who are anointed. And Tyreek was anointed.
He was. And then, well, the other thing was, too, Tyreek they were like, hey, why don't we just give this guy a foot and make him shoot threes, and then he'll miss everything.
People just figured, like, it just took a little time, and then they figured him out, and then now what? But, yeah, Davis is a good one. I had him on there. One that I don't remember the timeline.
I blame the Pelicans. Like, I honestly, like, my differentiation like, I blame the Pelicans.
Doesn't the what's the name of the owner of the Pelicans? Is it Tom Benson? He owns the Saints, too, right? That's his name?
Well,
I can't remember,
because George Shin moved them, and then Benson bought them off because Shin was such a jerk.
You're always a little
off.
Worried when you have those owners where it's like a major market where the Saints are number one. Like New Orleans should have moved. Like they don't deserve a basketball team. Like sorry, it's true. When that whole Sonics situation happened, that New Orleans team should have. If Katrina doesn't happen, they end up in Oklahoma City. Seattle stays put. And like,
JD,
I don't
get
know.
Over it, man. Get over it. That was a long time ago.
JD picking on the hurricane ravaged people.
They don't deserve.
That's what he just did. That's what he did. Yeah. I'm kidding. That's
you don't deserve it, New Orleans. You got the Saints. That's what you love. Just leave it at that. Move that team. Wow, give Anthony Davis to Seattle. That makes sense.
JD, you really don't think the good Charlotte people in New Orleans deserved any of our goodwill?
No one goes to games there. Like they haven't historically. They didn't before Katrina. They haven't after.
Okay, I'm gonna go with, and again, the timeline doesn't, I'm not sure how the timeline lines up on this. It may have happened this summer, but the fact that we still haven't seen Joel Embiid, I think, is super disappointing. And I don't feel ever going to see the guy who we were kind of promised coming out of the draft. And the other one I thought of was the Milwaukee Bucks, who I'm not a Greg Monroe fan, but I thought they were at least going to take another step forward and build off what they did last year. And they've just been, I don't know if you've watched any Milwaukee games. They're almost unwatchable. Yeah.
They're no good.
Despite having
too many of the
super athletic young guys. Yeah, they have too many of the same guy. But I thought they were going to take a step forward and be one of those hungry, young, up-and-coming teams once again in the East, and they just haven't been.
That injury to Jabari Parker really screwed him up, I think, because he was already a guy that struggled with like his weight a little bit in the NBA body. And then he ends up with a kind of catastrophic injury, misses a full season off the court, and now it's kind of been tough sledding for him to kind of get back into his old rhythm.
Yeah, and I think now they're still a couple years away. listen, Tim McCallum.
Perennially.
Appreciate you coming on.
Sorry, I was late, boys.
All
I don't
good.
Know if anyone on the podcast, anyone knows
one,
I was late. Did you just talk about me the whole first part of the podcast?
Basically, we were just like, and this is what else I don't like
that
about Tim.
Yeah. Didn't show up.
One thing I want to ask you, though, and I was just thinking of it on the way here this morning. On the score, on your score days, one of my favorite television programs ever, Court Cuts.
Truly was excellent.
And you manned the helm there.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's too long ago, but like, was there any nights that stick out for you from that? I mean, that was, I don't know why they haven't brought that back yet. That to me was like the perfect way for a guy with a short attention span like me. That was right in my wheelhouse of how to consume sports.
The best thing about is, so the show is actually called Court Surfing.
Court Surfing. Yeah.
But hold on. But because Court Cuts, which we started, like Court Cuts, like, was so good that people called the show Court Cuts, and Court Surfing was the name of the show.
I totally
but
just
no,
did
but here's and now like look around every station, TSN, Sportsnet. There's like 40 shows that are just, hey, here are the best plays. Mm-hmm. And our thought process at the score was like, does anyone ever turn away from good plays? Like, I don't know if anyone ever turns away when you just show them good play. And now there's like 40 shows that exist that are basically like Court Cuts or Ice Surfing or, I mean, Diamond, the baseball one that MLB.
Yeah.
There's Red Diamond Zone cuts. For NFL and there's Diamond Cuts. Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. That's not what it is, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
They did it before us, so I don't want to say act like we did it, but.
I was wrong because Court Cuts, the highlight pack, is the best in the biz. And we still have it here on Sportsnet, which is kind of cool.
I loved Court Cuts. Court Surfing used to drive me nuts because I'd get invested in it. And I'd be like, I'd want to watch a game. And they'd be like, okay, we're going to it now. And then something would happen. Like they call a timeout right away and be like, oh, actually, we're not going there. We're going to go to some other game.
Was, was League Pass as prevalent?
No, nobody.
So basically, it was like it was League Pass, except you don't have to worry about the remote, essentially.
That's why it existed and it doesn't exist now. League. But the other thing was, is like, give us our your remote. Because I'd sit in, it was like the ultimate dude's job. I'd sit in a studio with like 10 televisions. And we'd be like, okay, we got to go here. And we'd be waiting for like the free throws. And then the producer and I would be talking like off air about like, okay, so if he makes these two free throws, this jam's basically done. So let's bounce over there. So we'd frustrate people, but I'm like, just give me the clicker. I'm an expert. If we can get through it.
I just wanted more Sonics.
I loved courts.
I was just like, more Sonics. That's all we needed. Like, every time they'd cut away from the Sonics game, I'd be like, I'd be pissed.
We get a lot of that. And there were a lot of Americans that came up and they'd be like, the way you guys do the NCAA tournament, the way you do court surfing, we need it down there. And I'm like, you can't do that. Like, if you ever cut away from a Kentucky game, someone would show up at the station with a gun. Like, they're up, 40, and it's like 10 minutes left or 4 minutes left, and you go off, and they'd be like, anyways.
That year, that guy might be me. I want to see Jamal Murray.
So there you go. Or the Sonics. I would have got shot.
One of the two. You would have.
If JD was closer and one wasn't jumping off a bridge in Whitehorse.
More Detlef Schrempf. That would have been it. Yeah, jumping off a bridge.
Well, listen, this has been cool. It's been fun. Thanks again for stopping by, Tim.
Oh, sorry I was late.
We'll have to grab you at the end of the year.
I'll make up for it. I won't forget that we're doing it.
All right, Tim and Sid, weeknights on Sportsnet. 5 to 7.
It'll show. You're welcome for us plugging it.
Yeah, yes. I hear good things. I hear great things about it.
Big day for you.
Mediocre at best.
Thanks, guys. Right on. Now we got a little story. I'm gonna yap my lips a little bit for you, baby. Now, I ran into a real out of sight chick today. She was, I'm gonna tell you, I don't know what her name was, but I tell you this. You heard about the girl with the skinny legs. Well, this chick ain't had no skinny leg, man. She was out of sight. Out of sight. So we got a little thing to go. All right, welcome back to Free Association. I am Dave Zarum, at Dave Zarum on Twitter. Alongside me, JD Bunkus, at JD Bunkus. That's right, the one and only.
The one and only, though I hear there's an arms race for your Twitter handle.
There always is. Listen, I beat you to it. All you other JD Bunkuses, relax. I'm not giving up the mantle. It is what it is. I beat you.
There may be many JD Bunkuses out there, but there's only one Mike James, a former Raptors point guard. I loved watching him play. I mean,
there's a lot of Mike Jameses, but there's maybe the only one Mike James that was in the 81-point Kobe game.
Yeah, he's the only Mike James you need to care about right now. We have a segment on our show. It's been a while. James World, where we take a dive into the world of Mike James, the wild world of Mike James. This week, he's going to talk about Kobe's 81-point game. The anniversary was last week. Mike James, quietly the best player on the floor for the Toronto Raptors, played 37 minutes that night. His major regret, he didn't get to guard Kobe.
My turn now, and I am absolutely tickled by this.
It's James World with NBA veteran Mike James.
Are you kidding me? Oh, they're gonna hit it.
You know, it's tough being a part of that game. I think I've only watched the game once, and
to look at him and you commend him for his work ethic. You commend him for all of his accomplishments. You know, he's compared to one of the greatest players to ever play the game. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to emulate any player, then why not emulate the best? And why not try to be like the best? And one of the greatest attributes that Michael Jordan did for Kobe Bryant's game was he taught Kobe how to work hard and have a work ethic. And because of that work ethic, Kobe was considered one of the best. But they say hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. But imagine if the talent works hard. And if you take on that type of attitude, man, you're going to have an opportunity to showcase maybe a night like this. You know, you have the access, you have the confidence, and you have the platform and the stage to be able to do it. And this was one of those nights that he showed all of his work, and it just so happened to be against us that night. Well, I was going to a party in Amityville. I mean, we knew you know, as a fan of the game and watching SportsCenter, you see what Kobe is doing. So, hey, you never know what this guy was capable of doing, which means that he was on a hot streak. Like, this is where his mindset was. And even the beginning of that game, you can just see a different aggressiveness that he had early in the game. That even if he was missing shots, whatever he was doing, he was just extremely aggressive. And the player gets into that mindset going into the fourth quarter or the last 5 minutes of the game when it's winning time. But he was already at another state of mind, even in the first, like, the first 5 minutes of the first quarter.
Such a good choice to choose the Amityville Horror over anytime people think James World. Yeah, just like every time people think that, yeah, that people think we should use the James World. And that was actually my original pitch. I'm like, no, that if everybody thinks that's a good idea, it's probably a bad idea.
I tried that with the Wayne's World theme like way back when, but Mike loves the Amityville song.
Yeah, he does. Exactly. He's on record saying he likes it. Can I just say one quick thing about the Kobe 81-point game?
Sure.
Listen, Raptors fans, I know you're a sensitive bunch. Like when a Raptor gets left out of like an All-Star nomination, you lose it. Or, you know, when other pundits, national pundits tend to say like, hey, I don't think the Raptors are the second best team in the East. There's a whole thread about why you hate this guy. And so I'm not trying to get on your bad side here, but the 81-point game is a little bit of an embarrassment for me because going through this week, it's like, Raptors fans embrace it like it's this great moment in team history. Like, it's so odd. Like, and everyone's like, oh, I remember the 81-point game. I remember where it was, and it was so great, and everyone's so happy about it. It's like, this should be a terrible memory. Like, no one should be happy that we're the franchise Kobe dropped 81 on, and yet for some reason, it's like, that's what Raptors fans are known for. It's like, we had Vince Carter. He was a dunk contest phenom.
Yep.
He had the bitter divorce with the Raptors, and they're the team Kobe scored 81 points against. It's like those are the four benchmarks of the Raptors.
The pillars for the Raptors history is they beat Jordan's Bulls
right.
In their first year.
I forgot that. Yeah.
In the midst of a terrible season, they
and
had
the best
a great
part about
game.
That is that they that commercial ran on TV. Like, remember when they did the that's the best thing. They had Raptors memories.
Okay.
Yeah, they were like, remember, greatest moments in Raptors history. And like one of them was the London game, which they lost to the Brooklyn Nets.
One of the great, like, one of the great moments memories. In Raptors history is like the meaningless game Donyell Marshall dropped
right.
like 10 threes.
That's what I mean.
It's Vince of the Dunk Contest for sure.
I don't even think that got into the memories commercial.
Well,
that's
the number one memory.
Of course.
That's the number one moment in Raptors history, and you should check out Sportsnet magazine if you want to know why.
Yeah, Dave does have a really good piece on it. It's very much worth reading.
The other pillar is reaching the second round of the playoffs. And losing in game 7.
Right. Vince's graduation actually should be.
And I feel like I'm forgetting. Oh, yeah. When Rafael Arujo picked a fight with Bonzi Wells.
And also.
Bonzi Wells.
Speaking of Hafa, we got to give that quick shout out for being corrected.
Tom Dolby.
Yeah.
What did I say? I said.
You had the wrong draft. You said Charlie V ahead of
Iguodala.
Iggy.
Yeah,
and
it was
Hafa.
Also,
which makes it even
Tom
so
Dolby
much
gets a lot of credit for naming the best David Bowie choice from our show last year. He said Dr. J, Julius Erving.
Was a really good call.
That's a good one.
But yeah, so there's
for a number
that.
Of reasons.
It's like they're the team that drafted Andrea Bargnani first overall.
Yeah, what it is, it's a total Napoleonic complex. That's why like this stretch, like the last couple years for the Raptors, that's why I think people are so excited because it's like, wow, we really haven't had anything to cling on to.
They're
if you're
excited
a
when
fan.
It's not remembering that Kobe scored 81 points against us. Anyways, that's my beef. Get over it.
Anyways, good stuff from Mike. Thanks for that. Listen, anything else you want to get in here? You mentioned at the top that things are going to keep looking good for the Raptors because when you take a look at their schedule, it doesn't get any harder.
I just don't think that there's a clear cut end in sight. They've got another 3 home games coming up. I think Washington, Detroit will be kind of a tougher game. The Knicks. And then they hit the road, and I don't think that they play a team that's over 500 on their little
Phoenix
mini road trip.
Phoenix is one of those teams, yeah.
Denver, there's no one really tough. Beat Denver this time, for God's sakes. Anyway,
it's time to wrap up the show. So thank you, JD. Again, you can catch JD at JD Bunkus. You can find me at Dave Zarum. You can find the show, as you know, but tell your friends, on iTunes, on sportsnet.ca every Tuesday. If you're on iTunes, go ahead and leave some reviews. We always appreciate that. Check out Sportsnet magazine. Current issue has the oral history of Vince Carter at the 2000 dunk contest. And the next issue, I can't say too much, but a lot of great basketball content in there as well. I will leave it at that. I'll leave the intrigue there. So thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. Thanks again to Tim McAuliffe and Mike James. power duo if I've ever heard. You were listening to Free Association, and now you're not.
This is about all of us. I love you, people.